to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth. Hello, this is Journeys with JP. Welcome once again to Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com, Wolf Spirit Radio and No Borders Radio. Yes, it is. It is the 1st of July, 2013. Oh my God. It's every date, it seems like gone. Have we lasted this long? Well, soon to tell us how we're not going to last much longer. No, this is possibly the final. You never know how long it might go on for, but the final conversation with I stumble on your first name even, Gordon James Gianinotto. Greetings, Gordon.
Good evening, kind sir.
Yes. So, what we're hoping for is some questions and some feedback. And any other comments that anybody might like to make, I have the Wolf Spirit Radio telephone forwarded to me. You can call in on Revolution Radio. You can put things in various chat boxes. Actually, if there's any mods, if there are any people watching the No Borders Radio, see if there's any questions in there. Can you forward them to my Skype? Because there's just too many... too many chat rooms for me to monitor all at once, so it really helps if
you,
people.
You only it. Had six ears and six sets of eyes.
It's the eyes. Yeah. I could do with better eyes, actually. My eyeballs.
Six sets of voices, you'd be fine.
Well, I'd need 12 ears, and then things would start looking a bit weird. So here we are. It's only the end of the world again.
It's nice to be back, and as if you've been following, there are 9 previous hours, and we're going for hours 10 and 11. Hopefully, we're going to have some insightful questions that are going to elicit wonderful answers. But mm-hmm. I've got to take a moment to say that Revolution Radio and Wolf Spirit Radio are listener-supported. In other words, if you don't send a check to these people, cash... or use PayPal, they're not going to be on the line. And this is so important for you to hear this information that you're not hearing anywhere else. So I suggest that everyone who enjoys these programs and any other programs on those stations to make donations. And I thank them both for simulcasting. That's very cooperative and very important to reach as many people as possible. And a better way to reach as many people as possible it would be if everyone would call up 5 of their friends and say, you've got to be listening to this stuff. You're not going to find it anywhere else. This is the really important things about what's happening and what's about to happen. And you're not going to get insight like that and understanding like that anywhere else, because this, if it were a paying proposition in any way, you can bet the networks would already be carrying it and they'd already be messing it up. But this is the pure, unadulterated stuff. The stuff that's really can change your life and can save your life. So I hope everyone takes that to heart. And please, if you tell more people about it, then there's more listeners, then hopefully there's more supporters. This can only grow. So thank you very much, Jay.
Excellent. Thank you very much. That's interesting. What's happening there? I'm just looking at the two things. So if you can website with Revolution Radio Studio B, could you anybody who's listening to B, can you just say hi in the chat room or pop up, because it's often difficult to tell who's talking to whom. If you have questions, and you're in on you're listening on the Revolution Radio, and you're in the Rev chat room. If you put a B and then a colon, just to say that, you know, with Studio B, and then you write your letter in uppercase, so that in capital letters, so that it really stands out for me, because most of the time they're talking about the other program on the other channel. It's very difficult to discern my stuff. So there you go. Whoever's listening on B, just pop something on in the chat room if you can. That's brilliant.
Now, I've been talking about a lot of stuff about ET disclosure, Planet X, the future, Earth changes, collapse of government. I mean, there's so many different areas here. If you'd like to discuss them, make a comment or ask a question, please do. We're on three different radio stations. Now, what's the third radio station that we're on?
No Borders Radio.
No Borders Radio, and I assume their listeners support it as well.
Yes, we're just starting out, and we're doing it for as little as possible. I mean, a lot of us have got the setups already and are running other radio stations, Patty Walking Turtle and Tracy Kennedy, to name but two. So we're doing a kind of throwing a lot into a pot, and I think it's networking the whole thing. It's the idea of a single station producing single content is changing now. It's like blogs. You know, everybody reposts people's blogs. Well, people also simulcast their radio stations, and that's how it gets out. So it might seem you've only got like 10 people listening to this particular stream, but like three of those are broadcasting to another 10, etc.
Right, and not only that, these things are archived, and Revolution Radio puts it on YouTube the next day, and Wolf Spirit archives it, and they've just started a membership to access the archives, but they've got to get some money somewhere. You know, if you people had sent a lot of cash in, then there wouldn't be a charge for the archives, would there?
No, there would not. All right. So is anyone?
I had a lovely dinner this afternoon with my nephew and Harrison and Susan, with my wife, and they said, "Well, would you do a shout out on the show?" And I thought, you know, I've never done that. But hi, Harrison and Susan, hope you're listening. So
excellent.
There you go.
And I hope their food was pleasant and
oh,
tasty.
My God, they're master chefs. I mean, they marinated some chicken and slowly cooked it over a grill and marinated some asparagus and made some potatoes with butter. I mean, what more do you want? Simple meal, delightful, and great company. So
that sounds lovely.
Sounds
absolutely gorgeous. So, if
you and I were having a discussion last night, and we could sort of continue that about these survival skills, because I was mentioning a new show that was on the Discovery Channel, and I know there's a lot of people that don't even own a TV, or they don't have cable, so they just get the local channels. I know there's a lot of situations out there, but there is a new show on Discovery Channel about putting a man and a woman who have never met before, who are survivalists, into a situation where they're alone in the wild or the wilderness or the jungle or the open plains of Africa, and puts them there for survival with nothing. They meet naked, and they are allowed to bring one thing, like some of the things that people brought. One couple, the man brought a fire starter because they were in the wet rainforest, and the woman brought a machete, and the other show in the plains of Africa with lions and hyenas all around, the woman brought a quart pot to boil water because water is very unclean in Africa. You can't trust it. And the man brought a hunting knife, and that's all they have. They're naked. The name of the show is Naked and Afraid, but I was talking to JP last night. I said, I do not understand why these people don't make spears, bows and arrows, bolos, boomerangs, blowguns, whatever they can make with the materials, which, you know, you'd think, well, in the plains in Africa, there isn't a lot to work with, but there actually is. And vines, make them into nets, catch fish, catch birds, I just didn't understand how come these people, they have to spend 21 days, and the show is 1 hour long about their experiences together. And I just was mystified about these survival experts that at least the first two shows, they found water, and they did find a little bit of food. But I'm waiting for somebody that really knows something to be on it. But it's really interesting, I've got to say. And, you know, you never want to be caught naked with nothing, and then all of a sudden you've got to survive. And not every climate is a pleasant 80 degrees. So, you know, but it's interesting that there are all these shows. There are shows where there's two men go out into a wilderness, and they have to survive with nothing, but they have their clothes on. And then there's other shows where a guy goes to really remote places and he stays there for a week or whatever length of time it is, and he has to provide fire and heat for himself. And like he'll find like an old vehicle, and he'll take a battery and some steel wool and hook up the battery to the steel wool, and it immediately bursts into a hot flame. So I've seen several fires started that way. But you got to think, like, what if you are in a situation where there's no place to go shopping, there's no food, and how are you going to feed yourself? How are you going to feed your family? And I said before on this show, I recommend that the one thing that people do is buy an edible plants book for your area and start learning about, imagine if one day a week you didn't go to the grocery store and you fed yourself from your yard, where would you start? And if you can do that, then pretty much you're ready to survive the collapse of society. I mean, I've said the economy is a house of cards. Scandals are being exposed every day with the government, and I'm predicting absolutely that there's going to come a day where people are going to march in the streets and say, that's it, no more government, none. So, you know, it's time to think, like, what if everything weren't cushy the way it is now? What if I didn't get my paycheck? What if I didn't live in my house? You know, if the power goes out, a lot of people, I've seen ridiculous things. People pump sewage uphill to their septic field from their house. Well, great. That relies 100% on electricity. The electricity goes out, guess where all that sewage that was uphill goes? It goes right back downhill, up, bubbles up through the toilet and ruins the house. So, there's you could review your housing situation and say, if the power went out and it didn't come back, what do I need to do, and what do I need to know? But others of you have to say, well, if I can't live here, where should I live? And you've got to get in your car on the weekends and go explore and say, what if I moved up here? What if I showed up here? Would people like me? Do I like those people? Do I have a skill I could trade? You know, these are real questions. You think that because you're sitting in your nice living room looking at your computer and listening to it, that everything's always going to stay the same. But if you really think about it, what's ever stayed the same? We've had a period since World War II where things seemed to get dramatically better, but in a sense, they didn't get better spiritually. They got more confused. But products and possessions seem to get better, and they seem to get better to the point where people focus on the possessions instead of the human qualities with each other. So, you know, this is the time right now before the disasters happen of every type at every kind in every place, all different for everybody. Before that happens, you should ask yourself, what is really the most important thing in my life? Is it possessions or is it people? And if it's people, what am I going to do about helping those people? Am I in the best place to help myself? Because you can't help anyone if you aren't helping yourself. So I thought I'd just get the discussion going with that subject, JP.
That's right, because, you know, if you're on the plane and the little oxygen mask drops down, what's going to happen? It's going to be, you're going to have to grab it and use it in order to help other people. You can't walk around without having the oxygen mask yourself.
Yeah, there's no air to breathe above 10,000 feet for most people. Very few people can start breathing all of a sudden from a sea level atmosphere to 10,000 feet. And that's why the air masks drop down at 10,000 feet and above, of course, if the pressure is lost. But it's the same thing. You can't help anyone unless, you know, you've helped yourself first.
That's right.
And then there's the, I was telling JP, I was writing to him saying, that here on the coast of Maine, there's a lot of fishing equipment stores, and you can go in there and buy commercial life jackets and survival suits and things like that. And there's one group of protection devices that you can purchase from Stearns, and each one comes with a little booklet, and it says plainly right in there, you open it up, and it said the will to survive is equal to anything that this device can do. And if you think about it, like in the winter in Maine, if somebody's in the ocean, the official tables give you like 2 minutes before you can't move a muscle, and that's it, you drown. And yet I personally know people who went periwinkling because they were broke, and they rowed out in a rowboat to some mud bar that was exposed at low tide, and the gathering periwinkles, which are little nickel-sized, black-shelled, shellfish-like snails, to sell, and not for very much money either, and they weren't paying attention to their rowboat. It's the middle of January, it's 30 below zero, and the tide carried their rowboat away. Now they're standing in knee-deep water, the tide's coming in, and they're a mile from the town, and they're looking at the lights at the town at night. And so they just go, well, the tables give us 2 minutes, that's it, we're going to die. No, they took off their clothes and their shoes mostly, and they swam back to town. And that took about half an hour, and maybe even more than that. And they got up on the shore, and they went home. So, and that was in the newspaper. But see, the will to survive is equal to anything that a life jacket could do for you. But actually, the will to survive is superior to anything else. So if you say to yourself, well, there's no way I'm going to survive, or if you're in shock and you just can't even believe that you're in this situation, of course you're not going to survive. You have to say to yourself and feel it with your heart, there's no way I'm going to die in this disaster. There's no way that I'm not going to be eating and that I'm going to be warm. And you just have to visualize that and act as if that's true, even if the facts seem to be against you, and you make it true. And that's because we're creators in training. And people have to give themselves a chance to try that. And when they do, they're going to find out that you actually have the power and the ability to turn events to your will. And that's really exciting. That's probably one of the most exciting things I've said in this whole series of interviews. And so you've got to believe in a positive outcome, a benevolent outcome. People use that phrase a lot, most benevolent outcome, MBO. But that's a way to live your life and everything that you do.
That's right. And also not attached to the outcome. Because, you know, you have your picture of the outcome, and you may end up being very disappointed. But what actually happened is you learned something amazing.
Yeah, and a lot of times what you expect is based on what you know already, but yet forces and events and circumstances are going to change all that in a way that you might not have foreseen, but in a way that can actually be better than anything that you imagined. I mean, really, if you think about your life and you say, when I was 20, what did I think I was going to be doing at 40? Or when I'm 20, and what do I think I'm going to be doing at age 25? I hardly know anyone who, but I know there are some people, but I hardly know anybody whose life actually turned out the way they thought it would. But most people would say, well, but it turned out better. Because, yes, I had some adversity, but it was like an opportunity to grow, and I learned something. Now I'm a better person, and I'm actually happier than I thought I would be.
Yeah, that's the thing. The other thing is that, you know, we do have a will to evolve as well as the will to survive. I suppose there's a kind of cutoff point. That if you haven't had enough success in these areas, you know, if you've never kind of had a successful like meditation, or has it never done anything for you, or, you know, any of those, then there's a kind of, people do tend to get a bit hopeless. But once you've tried one or two of these things and found that they do actually work and that your life somehow magically improves, once you discover that there is a kind of magical way of looking at things. When I say magical, I mean it's like beyond the regular ability to influence events, things happening well, things turning out right, things turning out how you want them to be. Strangely, you know, in a kind of odd way. So yeah, things do happen like that. Eh?
And you know, if you point yourself in the right direction and you take a few steps, then this will incorporate itself into your growth naturally. So if you're going around thinking, I want to become more sensitive, and I am more sensitive, and I'm going to be more sensitive, and I like being sensitive, and I like feeling other people's feelings and their thoughts. I like seeing what the point of things, when I look around me in the world, I can see what's happening. I understand it. I'm paying attention. When you've got that kind of an attitude, then it's only going to grow day by day, and it might grow in ways you didn't even, you know, think of. Like I was saying, that how my wife Janet discovered suddenly and unexpectedly, because an earthquake went under our house, that when her feet burn, it means she's feeling that an earthquake is about to happen very near us. So, but she's been working on increasing her psychic abilities for years and years and years. So that's just one unexpected benefit of it, to know when there's going to be an earthquake. 6 months before it happened, she was feeling burning in her feet and went to doctor after doctor after doctor, and it just kept getting worse and worse. And then the earthquake happened under our house, and it was only like a 2.5, so it didn't really break anything. But immediately the burning in her feet stopped. So, you know, you would think, like, if the earth plates are moving against each other, creating pressure in the granite, which is largely made of quartz crystal, and the quartz crystal, when it's pressured, discharges electricity, who would think that you could feel that with your feet? But she did.
Oh, well, I think you can definitely feel electricity with your feet. I mean, I think that's how telepathy works, through the ground, through the ley lines and everything like that.
Well,
I've got some questions. Got questions.
Oh, question.
Okay, excellent. Here's the first one, and as ever, from Norm, a really good question. It's really a two-part question. How about changing the weather, a condition I have observed? And if human beings have the ability to revise the weather conditions, don't we also have the ability to influence the orbital path of Nibiru?
Now that's a complex question. Well, yeah, there are many different ways to influence the weather, and one of the first people to really start in on that was Wilhelm Reich with his Cloudbuster. And what he did was he put a pipe on a pivot, just like it was an anti-aircraft gun, and he put one end of the pipe, connected it to a copper cable, and put it down a drilled artesian well deep in the earth to ground it out. And then he aimed the pipe at clouds, and they would evaporate. And then there was the work of Nikola Tesla, who invented a way to transmit electricity with one transmitter for the whole world. And Westinghouse said, well, there's no way to build a customer. We're not going to do that. But in the process, what it does is it creates a standing wave. And a standing wave is like a potential that's not discharged. So it's like a capacitor, and it uses the atmosphere of the earth as a capacitor. So by setting a pulse out, and it circles the earth, and it goes in opposite directions from the transmitter, it goes around the earth and comes back, and when it crosses the transmitter, at that exact moment you send out a second pulse, you gradually build up this huge standing wave. And then you can discharge it at will. So we could have like an electric saw that has a little antenna on the handle. No cord, no grid, no powerhouse, and you just go over and turn it on. It connects the antenna to the motor, and you're cutting wood. So these are things that could have been but weren't. But in the process, it was discovered that you can use other forms of radio energy to focus this standing wave, and you can discharge it in a positive and a negative way, so that, for instance, you could take a small place in the air, in the atmosphere, and superheat it enough to melt metal. And at the same time, miles away, you could supercool a place in the atmosphere, and so that any plane flying into it immediately freezes up, and that's it. It's too cold to operate. So they discovered these things, And then they started applying them to storms, because you have the high pressure areas rotate clockwise, and those are the clear air and the nice weather, and you feel good. And the low pressure, which are the storms, and the weather low rotates counterclockwise. So you've got a lot of things that you can do, because the movement of rain and the movement of moisture in the clouds is actually the same as electricity moving down a copper wire. What you have is a flow of electrons. So using standing waves and Tesla towers, you can influence the weather. And that's one of the side effects of the HARP antenna system in Alaska, is to be able to play with the weather. And at one point, the Air Force had a motto on its website that said, "We own the weather." So they were being quite boastful of it, and nobody's been able to prove whether they caused Hurricane Katrina, or in order to move people out of the Gulf Coast, or whether they made it so it wasn't as bad as it could have been. It's hard to say, but I'll give you an example. When the first invasion of Iraq happened with George H. Bush, they didn't invade Iraq, they invaded Kuwait. The one that started in 2003 with George W. Bush, that one, there was a 60-day sandstorm, I think it was, and nobody, not even in Iraq, had ever seen that. And it was whiteout conditions. There was no way that anyone could move any equipment, because the intakes would be full of sand, the engines would be ruined. They had to park alongside the road, everybody. The United States troops, the international troops, the Iraqi troops, everybody came to a complete stop. And this sandstorm went on for 60 days. And I go, and people said, even in the desert, said, "We've never seen anything like this." And I thought to myself, and I'm convinced of this, that the United States government created that sandstorm as a cover for them to go in with special equipment and clean house even before the war started. And that was a perfect cover. Who was ever going to know who was doing what? And I can't prove that, but I would bet money on it. So, yes, it's possible to influence the weather. It would be prohibitively expensive, of course, because it's the Earth and a complex system. If you push in one direction, you're getting your result right in front of you, but you're also getting a result behind you. And the other thing is, this takes a lot of power. I mean, if HARP were to be as powerful as people think it is, the whole state of Alaska would have to be covered in nuclear reactors. So,
HARP, the thing about HARP is, the reason it's there is there's an enormous pocket of gas underneath it. And basically they've got multiple gigawatt generators that that run this natural gas.
There are six countries in the world that have built HARP complexes. Israel is one of them. Russia is one of them. So there are people playing with stuff all the time. It's said that that's how the space shuttle was brought down over Seattle, and then parts of it, I think, were found in Texas, that it was created a standing field in the atmosphere, and the shuttle went through it and just exploded. And then that's how John F. Kennedy Jr. was killed, was he announced he was going to be running for president. And they created a super hot spot that his little light plane flew into in a fog where nobody could see it. And people on the ground said they saw an explosion. They said, "Oh no, he just lost his way. He didn't know which end was up, and that's why he crashed." But then the caskets were closed because they didn't want anybody to see how he and his fiance and her sister, I think that's who was on the plane, were terribly burned. So, you know, some of this stuff, let's face it, you're never going to know. But we can safely assume that electronic methods of controlling the weather have been at work for a long time, and they're never going to decrease. They're always going to be on the increase. And what this means and how it's going to work out, I really seriously doubt that anyone is to the point or will ever be to the point of being able to control the whole world this way. So I'm not worried about that. And then the part two, now that is a really interesting subject about redirecting Nibiru. And you're going to love some of these government harebrained schemes, and I know that all the listeners, if you're paying attention at all, have heard an endless number of government harebrained schemes, but this one is really one of our most secret projects, and that is that NASA has known for 60 years that Planet X was going to come into the solar system. They may have even known it before then, but they knew before NASA even formed that this was going to happen. So when it was formed, it wasn't the noble search for science, let's explore the universe, and we're going to benefit all of mankind. No. The reason why NASA was started was to figure out a way to build bases on the moon and Mars and lift the elite and the powerful and the rich off of Earth and come back after pole shift, and once the dust settles, land and be kings of the Earth, with most people dead because they're useless eaters and they contribute nothing anyway, and so who needs them? And technology's gone far enough that you can manufacture a lot of stuff without even a single person attending to it. So when they would come back, they wouldn't really need as many people, so if a lot of them died in the pole shift, that would be fine. And I said that the NASA patch has a monolith on it, which I still haven't figured out what the monolith has to do with anything, but I can imagine. And then above that are the three stars of Orion's belt. So they've known about pole shift coming, and even the Swiss have a bill, a money, printed paper money bill, and you can go to zetatalk.com and you can look at pictures of it, and also on poleshift.ning.com, and on this Swiss currency, paper currency, is a picture of the orbit of Nibiru coming into the solar system. So it's like, here it is, just like a Sherlock Holmes book, hidden in plain sight, right in front of you. People are talking about it and using whispering secret codes and secret ways of discussing it without anybody else knowing, but it's right there. The subject is too big to cover up. But what NASA did was, because they knew it was coming, they thought... And this is just out of a Bruce Willis movie. Remember that movie Armageddon? And they landed and they put nuclear bombs into it to break it up to keep it from hitting the Earth. Maybe
yeah,
redirect
that's a really, really good idea. Not. Smashing into a thousand meteorites.
Yeah, exactly, because ultimately you cannot change the face, the direction or trajectory of a body that's headed towards Earth at thousands of miles an hour. Even if you break it up into pieces, then you have, instead of one big thing hitting, you have a clump of the same volume and weight but spaced slightly, hitting in approximately the location it would have hit. So, but anyway, NASA came up with this plan. What if for 20 years every single space satellite we have, we put hydrogen bombs on board, the biggest ones we've ever built, and we have them going all over the solar system doing these little experiments, and then we're going to build a command center, and we're going to launch it, and we're going to tell people of the world that it's an international space station, and what a lovely place to do science experiments. And at the time that Planet X becomes obvious, we are going to redirect all these space satellites on all these different missions, orbiting Mars, orbiting the Moon, orbiting Venus, checking out the rings of Saturn, all these different, checking out asteroids, all of them loaded to the gills with hydrogen bombs, and they're going to steer them simultaneously all into the surface of Planet X and redirected away from colliding with Earth. Well, that's the first mistake. It's never going to collide because gravity pushes, so therefore planets don't collide. Second of all, these are the people that created us defectively as slaves for gold mining. And these people have science. How do you think they came to Earth a million years ago and mined gold for 600,000 years themselves and brought it back to Planet X to make it into dust to protect the atmosphere as a blanket? How do you think they did that if they didn't already have rocket ships a million years ago? So you can just imagine what they have today. And you can imagine that if all of a sudden Earth launches a whole bunch of hydrogen bombs at them, what are they going to do? This would not be good. And if you look in the Bible at something like Sodom and Gomorrah, and you see that clearly nuclear bombs were used in the desert in Egypt and Iraq and in New Mexico, even before they did the first nuclear test, there was green glass that only forms in a nuclear blast. So obviously the earth has histories going back in various locations. Then you have the scriptures of India that talk about there were floating cities and the leaders of the cities couldn't get along, so they attacked each other and blew each other up with the force of 1,000 suns in a blast that affected everybody on the ground for 100 miles. So obviously nuclear weapons are not a new scenario on Earth. So you can't, can you imagine, JP, that all of a sudden you're sitting there on planet X, which is an inhabited planet, the people are the Anunnaki, they're 8 to 12 feet tall, they've had space travel for 1,000,000 years, and all of a sudden they see a whole cluster of hydrogen bombs heading for them. Do you think they're just going to go, oh, that's interesting, let's let them go off? No. They could even probably turn them around and aim them back at us. But whatever the result would be, I can guarantee you this, it would not be pleasant. So that's why I called it a harebrained scheme. So that has been considered that they would love to move Planet X, and yet there's no plan from Earth that is worth the paper it's not printed on that would succeed in that. So no, there's not going to be any movement on Earth to steer Planet X away. And how would you move it? 29,000 miles in diameter, 23 times the magnetic field of Earth, streaming 10 million long twin-stranded tails of moons, rocks, and dust, and you're going to steer that somewhere? What device would you recommend? So thanks for the question. Those are my comments.
So this is a good question because the Zetas, who you mentioned in the last show, say that they're bobbing the Earth up and down. Presumably.
No, said, oh, to simulate the seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah, because right now there's a huge Earth wobble. So as you lean forward and you put your face towards your computer screen, and then you slowly lean to the left, and as you do that, you back away from your computer screen until you're sitting upright, and then you go more to the right, and so you're going counterclockwise, sort of, mm-hmm. and you come back to the right, and you approach, have your face approach the screen closer again. That's the wobble that the Earth is doing every single day because of the attraction of the North Pole of Planet X, which is pointed at the Earth like a flashlight, mm-hmm. pulling the Great Metal Bar, which is the magma that's upwelled in the center of the Atlantic called the Great Atlantic Rift. It's pulling that down every day, every time the Atlantic faces the sun, because Planet X is off to the side of the sun. So every time the Atlantic faces it, pulls it down from the North Atlantic towards the sun. So the North Pole of Planet X pulls the Earth down, which consequently brings the North Pole to being closer to the North Pole of Planet X. But as soon as the Great Atlantic Rift, as the Earth rotates, as soon as it turns and it releases its grip on the Atlantic Rift, the two North Poles repel each other violently. So the North Pole of Earth gets thrown back away from the Sun. So that's the Earth wobble. The simulation of the seasons is a different matter, because if you look into the astronomy books, you'll see that the Earth's polar axis is angle, is not point straight up and straight down. It's actually 23 degrees off. And as it goes around in orbit around the sun, it has the same angle. So when it's on the left, the top of the North Pole is pointed to the right, a little bit leaning a little bit to the right. And then when it's on the other side of the sun, the North Pole is still pointed to the right, but now the sun is on the left of the Earth. So that's how you get the seasons. Excuse me. And so how extraterrestrials would simulate the seasons, I can just imagine. I'm not privy to the details, but obviously they would have to tilt the Earth in such a way. But it's very interesting that we're having this monster heat wave here in the northern hemisphere. I mean, record setting out west in every respect. At the same time that people are freezing to death in northern India and Pakistan. So, the extraterrestrials said through Nancy Leader, which is printed in Zeta Talk, they explained that were it not for them simulating the seasons, all Earth on life would die, because all life on Earth takes cues from the seasons. And that's how things reproduce themselves. That's how they know where to migrate to. That's how they know what direction to head, what the food they can find at what time of the year. All of these cues. And if they were all of a sudden to go missing, like some sort of investigative detective show, missing in action, so much of the life around us would become so confused that it would just fail. You know, a lot of this is a delicate balance honed over millions of years. Yes, there's a little bit of evolution, but most of it's people bringing animals and species and plants from other planets as gifts and setting them free. And so, you know, the Earth is not the only planet with oceans, and it's not the only planet with oceans that has whales. And so a lot of these things have been transferred from planet to planet to planet because they know that when you terraform a planet, then it supports an abundant array of life, which makes a lot of other things possible. So, yes, there have been people playing with planet Earth since day one, as far back as you wish. And at times, there have been cataclysms that wiped everybody out. But there's never been a time where everyone was alive on the planet, trying to survive, animals, plants, the oceans, everything, and then it changed to a higher frequency. And that's the exciting time that we're in now. That's what we're about to go through. That's the point of that.
That's the event. So, more questions here from, this is from J2BS. Does the new Doppler systems help to heat up the lower atmosphere? I'm not sure what he's talking about, but are you?
Oh, I am. Yeah, it's like a microwave oven uses actually a radar transmitter to heat up your food. What it does is the microwaves agitate the molecules, and a lot of people say that that makes it so that the food's no longer the same as it was before you put it in there, and there may be a lot of truth to that. People have taken soil that was microwaved and soil that wasn't microwaved and planted plants, seedlings in each pot, and the ones that was microwaved, the seedling has died.
Yeah, well, there's the other story about the nurse who, instead of putting blood in an autoclave, put it in a microwave and the patient died straight away. Well, that's an apocryphal story.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm sure that for some things it's not so bad, otherwise people would be dropping like flies, because as far as I can see, everybody's using microwaves everywhere I look. But, and of course you've got them, I mean, you've got to realize that you can go down to a marine supply store and you can buy a radar unit for a boat that has a 25, depending on how much money you spend, 25, 50, or 100 mile range, and you can go put it on top of your house, and you can scan the skies for UFOs, weather fronts, anything you want that shows up on radar, aircraft, in color too. They're very nice sets. You wouldn't believe, well, you know, if you look at the price of TVs, the price of electronics has just plummeted compared to the price of everything else. So, the same thing is true. Electronics are cheaper, so every single boat these days, I mean, it would almost be negligent if you didn't have a radar that on it. You know, if it's a day sailor, no. If it's a rowboat, no. But if you're going to be out on the ocean and you might be there overnight, you damn well better have radar on there. So just think of how many boats are on the ocean, how many radar sets there are. Then, doesn't every TV station want to have its own mega Doppler radar system so they can report the weather more accurately than the other station? So, and then you've got the airports. And then you have, actually, military aircraft have their own radar on board to use for finding targets. And so there's radar everywhere. And I'm sure, to a certain extent, it might be heating up the atmosphere. But it isn't heating up the atmosphere as much as the whole atmosphere is cooling, because seems like the evidence is in that for the last 20 years, global warming is a lie, and every year the atmosphere gets colder, the temperatures stay the same or get colder, and then you have increased snows in the Arctic, the Antarctic, and in the Himalayas. So all the ice melting is occurring on the ground. As the ground is heating up, as the North Pole of Planet X is agitating the magma. So I don't really think we have to worry about, listen, if you had to worry about the atmosphere heating up so much that it would cook you like a frog that didn't know he was being cooked, or a lobster that didn't know he was being cooked, if you had to worry about that, I'm sure people would be dropping like flies before that, because I would think there would come a point at which too many microwaves saturate the atmosphere, like too many chefs spoiling a stew.
Fried alive, Captain. Fried alive. It just came to me. Meanwhile, so where are we? We've got loads of...
These are interesting questions. Now, if you're listening, why don't you get on the chat and write out a question?
Yeah. We do have quite a lot of listeners, apparently, on iTunes. So I'd like to welcome many, many listeners on iTunes. Good afternoon. Right, so where are we? Yeah, we're talking about that. Let's read that.
You have another question?
I'm just looking at just looking back on the chat room.
Just call me your walking encyclopedia and ask me any question you want.
just to add a thing, there's something that the Romans brought with them. Which is a little vegetable. It's a leaf, and it can be used like spinach if it's fresh, and it grows really virulently. So they probably just took a few strands of root with them, and would plant this stuff. And it's more or less a weed, but it's called ground elder. And my girlfriend and I have been feasting on it because my garden's full of it.
I've never heard of it, but if it were around, I've tried. You know, I take that list of edible plants and I go out and taste them, and I'm like, oh my god, this tastes like cardboard. You know, but think about it. I mean, you've heard of that plant that's taking over the South called kudzu?
Kudzu? No, I've not heard about that one.
KUDZU. I forget where it came from, but anyway, it loves warm climate, hates to be frozen in the winter, so the frost line is where it ends, and it will grow 1 to 3 feet a day, and it's a vine, and it has these broad leaves, and it climbs up telephone poles and shorts out the electric grid. It shorts out telephone lines. The weight of it on a tree can just pull the tree down. It covers the ground, and it just expands at a mad rate, and even a small piece of it will sprout and continue breeding. So this stuff is about as pernicious a substance as you can have, because it's almost impossible to get rid of. If accidentally in trying to get rid of it you cut it, you've just created another baby. Mm. And it's called kudzu. And it is really interesting. If you don't know anything about this plant, you should really look it up. But guess what? It's packed with protein. It's like eating a steak. And actually, you know, cattle don't eat meat. They eat plant food. Cattle have to be taken away from it because they will actually poison their kidneys and the liver because it's too protein rich, and they will die if they eat too much kudzu. So you can imagine the fun that some of these farmers have in Georgia trying to raise cattle in a pasture where there's no kudzu, whereas for 10 miles in every direction it's a kudzu thicket. And but the great thing is it's edible for humans. You can have that as part of a balanced diet. First of all, it's green, so it's got lots of chlorophyll, which means it's got lots of iron. Second of all, it's a high-protein plant. So there are a lot of invasive things that are very interesting that never should have happened that are causing people to tear their hair out, because you know that commercial agriculture is a program, and they want you to pay for the seeds, they want you to pay for the fertilizers, the herbicides. You know, it's a whole program that has got you locked in, and once you get into it, it's very difficult to get out of it. So it's refreshing in some respects to have this totally out of control thing happen, which seems like bad for the program, but it's like the little person can cheer for it. You know, the meaningless people can like walk out the door and there's something to eat. So
that's right. And it's interesting that it shorts out telegraph lines. Somehow it takes it's nature taking back over. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a reaction to the strict control of ConAgra and Monsanto and all these genetic scientists and this we're just going to get everything into a program, which, you know, maybe that is going to work on a spaceship. Like, let's say that you needed to live for 100 years on a spaceship going to God knows where. But, on Earth, the fact is that originally all the species had infinite little variations. So if there was a flood, it might kill some of the plants that couldn't handle that much water. But yet in the next valley over, there would be a variation of those same plants that love water. So you get this sort of natural selection and evolution and all these varieties, and along come the corporations and want to eliminate all of them, give everybody the same rice plant, you've got to artificially grow it in the same way, and there's this program. And yet, you know, I've had some wonderful experiences. I grew up in Connecticut, and there wasn't a single sassafras tree in the state as far as I knew. And I spent a lot of time outside, and I knew the land where I lived extremely well. I knew every plant. And all of a sudden, one summer, there was this stuff about, you know, between ankle and knee high growing up. And I'm like, what in the hell is that? And I broke off a twig, and there it is, sassafras. It's a sassafras tree. Somehow, don't ask me how, a storm maybe blew in a trillion sassafras seeds all over the whole state of Connecticut, and then all of a sudden, everywhere you go, you can find sassafras like nothing, and you can't find a single tree that is over older than that class from that first year. There's not one other tree. It's not like it spread from, you know, there were a few, and then they had a good year, and there were millions, and then nothing much happened for a while, and then there was a really good year, and there were billions. No, it's not like nobody ever had a sassafras tree in Connecticut. So,
well, you know, I'm getting to the to have the opinion that the Earth is an experimental laboratory for some races. It's an experimental laboratory, and they literally drop stuff on the planet and see what happens.
Oh yeah, I mean, you know, if you read Charles Fort's book called Book of the Damned, and what he's talking about, because you would think, well, that's a spiritual Christian book, I don't want to read it, but that has got to be one of the most interesting books ever written because he took millions of little stories, like over here fish fell from the sky, and over here frogs fell from the sky, and over there they opened up a chunk of coal and there was a live frog in it, and they dated the coal to 300 million years ago. Or they opened up a chunk of coal and there was a nut and a bolt, and they dated that to 500 million years ago. So there are all these things that don't fit in. And of course, if you've read Forbidden Archaeology by Michael Cremo, you see that science can't handle these anomalies because they've got a story they agreed upon, and you have to publish things that back that up. You can't suddenly say, hey, that's wrong, this is what's, you know, really going on. You can't do that. You won't get tenure, you won't get a grant for your work, probably have to leave your job. I mean, there's all kinds of ways of putting pressure on these people so they just don't bring this stuff out. But I'll give you an example. These nuns somewhere had, and you can read it in the Book of the Damned, had a field they just kept giving incredible wheat crops every year, and they thought, you know, this year let's leave it fallow. So they turned it over, and they didn't plant anything. And all of a sudden there was a storm, and there was a fall of wheat, the likes of which nobody's ever seen before, and it sprinkled all over this field. So then the single most beautiful field of wheat, even in this good place where the nuns really knew what they were doing, grew up on its own. And just as it was ready to harvest, and they're thinking, wow, we're going to go harvest this, a big windstorm came in and sucked up all the wheat, and it was last seen going up into the sky and disappearing.
So that's an entity that is...
Well, where did they use that? You know, who did that, and where did they use it, and what was it for? Did they take that to another planet and plant wheat? I mean, is that feeding humans that have been on extraterrestrial ships?
Yeah.
Is this feeding domed cities that are invisible? Where does this go, and how much of this stuff goes on?
Yeah. I mean, how much of the world is uninhabited than this stuff goes on?
Right. Now, I'll give you another example of extraterrestrial intervention that very few people are aware of. But, you know, like that flight from New York, what was it? 300 or 800. Anyway, it took off from New York City, at TWA, and then it was probably hit by a missile from a barge. It was probably a terrorist incident, and they said the fuel tank blew up, and the thing crashed, and everybody died. And do you remember there was another flight that took off from, I think it was Buenos Aires, and it was a direct flight to Paris, and it got out over the South Atlantic, and then it disappeared, and they found wreckage.
We'll be right back. Stay tuned for more Jort Gordon, James Giannotto on Journeys with JP. This is Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com and Wolf Spirit Radio at wolfspiritradio.com and No Borders Radio at noBordersRadio.com, and also available on iTunes and some other places that I don't even imagine are rebroadcasting this. So it's very good to know that we're all getting out tonight. So I'm also very grateful for Tom, a mad painter who I believe is my producer tonight. I'm not quite sure, because I just get on with it. Anyway, so tonight I'm speaking with Gordon James Giannotto, and we're discussing Planet X, the end of civilization as we know it, and how do we stop? Here's my question, Gordon. Is there a way, all right, so here's the thing. I heard that the Illuminati were going to wait for it all to get over, wait for everybody to die, and then they were going to reveal themselves, we've been here for years, and, what if it kind of all goes around the other way and they reveal themselves before any disasters? Would this be a way of thwarting their plans by any chance?
Well, I don't know that you could, because you see, from your point of view, you're thinking, well, if I were David Rockefeller, I'd have everything that I want. And that's what you'd be thinking, because you're thinking, well, he controls $1 billion trust. He probably has another $1 billion himself. He has influence over the Federal Reserve Board with the Rothschilds. And you think, wow, this guy's really at the top. I wish I were David Rockefeller. But you would be wrong, because he is just as scared of the next guy up, who for him is the head of all the Rothschilds trusts, and they tell Rockefeller what to do. He may have a lot of money, but let me just tell you that once you reach a certain level of wealth, you either go with the program or shut up. But if you want to cause trouble with that much power, you are going to die. So it's not possible that you would ever know who's above the Rothschilds. But let me describe them to you. They would be people who are so selfish that they think, by not being ostentatious with power or money, that you will never know who they are. And in a room where there were three people, one of them would be the most powerful person on earth, who the Zetas call the puppet master. But other people have suggested there's a dozen such entities, and some of them are so large they don't even fit in a single soul, that they might incarnate into 3 million souls simultaneously. So you've got 12 of the most darkest, most selfish beings anywhere in the universe are each incarnated into 3 or 4 million people. You can see what the problem is. So In a room where there's only three people, and the most powerful one in the world would be the one you would notice the least, it's not likely that they're ever going to say who they are. And even if they do get to go to another planet and then come back after the dust settles, they're still not going to be able to, nor do they plan to, reveal themselves at all, because they have so many little minions who are further down in the ladder. They only owned a savings and loan bank corporation in Illinois, and they only control 100 banks. But what is that to the Rockefellers? Nothing. So you might know about a person who's accumulated $1 billion or $10 billion or $20 billion, because a lot of them actually now are financing private space travel. They're thinking, well, if the government's not going to create a spaceship to take us off the Earth, we'll build our own. But you see, that's really a poor idea when you realize that the solar system is going to be pelted with rocks. There isn't really a particularly safe area. And the unselfish ETs, the same ones that disabled all the hydrogen bombs and all the satellites, they're watching over everything. And this is slanted for success of unselfishness, and where it says in the last book in the Bible, the meek will inherit the earth. So they're not allowing this kind of thing to happen. Every single attempt to launch a satellite to another place that does have a legitimate scientific purpose and cannot take the schemes of the evil any further than they'd like, those things are allowed to happen. But the other things that have been done, and all the time you hear of intercontinental rockets or missiles being launched to space, and the whole thing fails. Satellite goes dead, the rocket fails. So there are people playing with the technology in the same way that they kick the Anunnaki off of Earth, is they go, wow, you've just been too evil, you're too selfish, you're killing people, you're scaring the hell out of people. Like I said on a previous show, just the idea that you have to kill something to worship God, isn't that a pretty sick thought? So these people that you see and that you're ever going to see are all the lower level ones. They're thinking, well, I'm going to please the really rich ones if I do X, Y, and Z for them. But believe me, you are never going to see who the elite are. And they're waking up slowly to a cold chill going down their spines, because they're realizing, well, our original plan was to go to other planets, the moon or Mars. And that's failed totally. There's no way that any progress is being made towards either goal. Second of all, let's dig tunnels underground. Well, that seemed like a great idea 60 years ago, but they've learned that those tunnels fracture in earth changes. They flood with water. They get filled with poison gas. The equipment, like the elevators and the doors they put in, when the rocks settle, there's no way you can open that door or use that elevator. So they're realizing, wow, underground is really not the right place to be if you're expecting 8, 9, and 10 Richter earthquakes. So then they're thinking, well, what we can do is hire a private army and build a mountain fortress and live there. And we can put away supplies. And as proof of that, yeah, I don't know if you live in Scotland, so I'm not sure what you know about what happens in the United States, but about 2 years ago there was a big scandal because the drug factories, now there's all kinds of drugs for all kinds of illnesses. I personally don't take any and don't want to be taking any. But there's plenty of people that take all kinds of things for acid indigestion, high blood pressure, diabetes, you name it. There's all kinds of pharmaceuticals. All of a sudden, even though the factories were running 24 hours a day, all of a sudden there was a severe shortage, so severe that it was headlines in the major newspapers in every city in the United States that hospitals couldn't get enough of this or that. And why would that be so? And I'll tell you, the super rich were paying doctors to say, you know, I'm probably going to live another 40 years. I want 40 years worth of heart medication. And they had the money to pay off the doctor, and they had the money to buy that much medication. And all of a sudden, there was this gigantic shortage of medication. I haven't heard about it so much. It's decreased in the last 2 years, so I have to figure that it was about 2 years ago. But if you remember, and I'm not sure that you do, but you've heard of freeze-dried food and how well it keeps, and meals ready to eat and that kind of stuff. There are only several really good manufacturers of freeze-dried food, and the federal government put in an order for $1 billion worth of freeze-dried food. And I was thinking, oh, isn't that nice? You know, when the New Madrid fault goes off and 8 states are destroyed by 9 and 10 power earthquakes, and all the brick buildings that were built in Missouri and Kentucky and Ohio and Illinois, all of them collapse, and there's 40 million people without homes, then they're going to distribute all these freeze-dried meals, until I ran into somebody that lives near Kokomo, Indiana. Well, many people have heard that there are a tunnel system under Denver, and they're just socking stuff away. That's where all the government agencies are moving. The government's getting ready for disaster, and they've chosen Denver as their carry-on location. And You know, so you look around Washington and you find these huge federal buildings are now going to go up for sale because the IRS has moved, NASA has moved, the CIA has moved, the FBI is in the process of moving. So all these agencies that were very happy in our nation's capital are now relocating to other places. Well, there's another location that you might not have heard of, and you might have heard of it, and it's Kokomo, Indiana. There's a gigantic underground complex in the limestone hills of Indiana, and Kokomo is the entrance to one of the biggest. And this is a supply point for the future carry-on government. And I met a person from Kokomo, Indiana, and I was talking about these freeze-dried meals, and nobody could order freeze-dried meals for about 6 months. Because this government order was being filled and they demanded precedence. So nobody had a chance to buy any freeze-dried meals unless they were already distributed to stores. But any new stuff, it all went to the federal government. And she said that she lives near one of the entrances to one of the tunnels, and as far as she could see off to the horizon, there were tractor trailers loaded to the gills with freeze-dried food going into those tunnels and coming out empty. So...
that's where it all went.
Yeah, so they're providing for themselves. And, of course, you know, when this happens and they come out of their tunnels, are you going to be happy to see them? I know I'm not. I might be tempted to go over to the door and weld it shut and say good riddance. But I probably wouldn't do that either. But when they come out and they realize that nobody has 40 years worth of food, nobody has 40 years worth of clothes, nobody has 40 years worth of tools, nobody has 40 years worth of materials to build houses and safe shelters, and everyone's going to have to work together because all this other stuff is going to be destroyed for a variety of reasons. Sloshing of the oceans, tidal waves, earth changes, earthquakes, subsidences, huge wind storms, hail storms, you name it. Everything's going to be pretty much, except in a few places, and you can't predict where those places are. Everything's going to be basically rubble, and everything has to be started at scratch. So a few of these people are going to survive with their private armies. Well, can you imagine being in the private army, and these are people who were selected out of the military with no empathy. Can you imagine being in the private army of the rich man, where there's all these supplies, and that's what you're eating, and that's where you're getting your clothing and your bullets and your guns, everything is being taken care of, but yet this guy is ordering you around like you're a robot. He's driving you around like you're a wheelbarrow. How long is it going to take for that person to realize the whole world is in an uproar? I want to leave, take my family, and go live somewhere else and survive. And so these private armies are going to, first of all, some of them are going to leave, the members, and others are going to turn on their bosses going, why should you be in charge? Why should you have all the gold coins in the vault? Why should you have all the freeze-dried food? You know, I'm better than you are. And they'll just pull out their gun and shoot this wealthy, powerful, elite person and get rid of them. And so, as is typical with selfish people, they think nothing of stepping on each other. And that's the beauty of working with an unselfish survival community, because you all are going to make a group decision, you're going to divide up the work, everyone's going to roll up their sleeves, each according to his skills and interests, or his or her skills or interests, is going to take a role in the survival of everyone. Whereas when you have a bunch of selfish people, the first thing they think is, how am I going to take advantage of everyone else? There's nobody thinking, well, as selfish people, we have to work together. No, they're going to pull out their gun and say, I'm going to kill this guy and I'm going to kill that guy because he's in the way of me taking over everything. Well, the other selfish guys are all thinking the same thoughts. So guess what? Guess who's the first group to fall apart, die, and disappear? It's the selfish people. Because forget helping anybody. They're going to focus all their attention to doing each other in until there's very few of them left.
I call it the rats in the sack effect.
Yeah, and you just have to picture it. This is not you know, deep rocket science. Just put what you know of human nature and selfish people you've met in your life together with the situation, And the only way that anybody's going to survive, and so these selfish people are finally realizing, oh my God, I can make every plane in the world, I can save every single supply that I ever imagined, I can do this and that, and I can plan all these things. And then, when it comes down to it, the only way they're going to survive is if they roll up their sleeves and go start working, digging in the fields and the gardens of a survival group to work together. Because if you're in a survival group and somebody comes and eats enough food for everybody for 12 days in 2 days, how happy are you going to be to see these people? You're going to take out your gun and say, I've given you two choices. Either I shoot you now on the spot, or I banish you from life. And if you ever come back, we will shoot you on the spot. And you make them leave. So these are all the tough moral decisions, but you're going to be able to make them together with other people in your area as a group. And the selfish people aren't going to know or care who anybody is or what they can do. Their only thought is going to be, how can I get rid of them so I can be on top? So, just understanding human nature, you see there's going to be a really dark phase. That's why the military is planning for future riots. This is why the Social Security Administration is training all of the Social Security officers to shoot and arming them. And the National Weather Service, weathermen are going to be packing. I mean, if you don't think there's a disaster, why in the hell do you think the federal government's spending billions, perhaps trillions, of your money to prepare for one if it's not going to happen? How could that be? How could it be that you're so asleep that you think everything's going to continue, whereas everywhere around you, in everything that you look at, there's signs that everyone is getting ready for disaster? And these are the powerful and the wealthy, the elite, who have always claimed they knew exactly what was happening, and there was nothing you could do to take their power away from them. If they're planning all of this, what are you planning? Can you really sit here listening to this show and say, yeah, I'm planning my retirement in 30 years, and I'll get a pension, and then I'm going to get a condo in Florida, and in the winter I'm going to go to Los Angeles.
I don't even know what I'm doing in 3 hours' time.
Well, exactly.
And I live in the now. So, Gordon, I've got a question, and Robert's, he's jumping up and down. So, Walter Cruttendon, now there's a surname. Walter Cruttendon talks about the sun having a binary star. Is that Nibiru?
Or is that Nibiru else? Is a planet, but it goes in a slingshot orbit between the sun and its twin, which supposedly is dead, which is why we don't know where it is and how to see it. That's another whole issue that I'll mention, just so you know it's there, which is that how can a planet go from one sun to another in 3,657 years? Even if it moves at X miles an hour, how far away is this other star? How come we don't know it? How come there aren't other planets rotating between it and us? If it's a binary system, why do we just go around the sun? How come we don't go in a big egg-shaped orbit around both suns? Even if one of them is almost dead and dark, still it must be a huge mass of material. Why wouldn't it have its own gravitational field and influence? Otherwise, how could Planet X come back into the system? So Planet X is not a star, it's a planet, and it's got human life on it. I've said before, and I'll say again, it's atmospheric, oceanic, and volcanic. It's mostly cloud covered most of the time, and the clouds are lit to a reddish pink color by the lava upwelling, just the way it does in Mount Etna in Sicily, and Mauna Loa, Mauna Lea on Hawaii. They just always spit lava out, and there's always a huge red glow around the tops of those volcanoes. So, but this happens with gigantic rifts on Planet X. So, it's not a star. So if it's going around a star, how does it get there? And the Zetas have mentioned, and this is like at the outer reaches of the interest of most physicists, which is, can you go faster than the speed of light? And they've done some wonderful experiments to discover that they can pass light through liquid hydrogen or oxygen, whatever it was, minus 400 degrees, and light actually slows down to where you could actually walk along with a pulse of light patting it and touching it every so often. That's how slow it's going. But they've never found a way to go faster than the speed of light, because they say it would take all the physical material of the world converted directly into energy to propel one particle at the speed of light. So how could you possibly go faster than the speed of light? But those people don't have the correct understanding of dimensions, because science has like come a little bit better than it was when I was a kid, but now they've got this theory that there's three dimensions, length, width, and height, and that each of those three has three dimensions of its own. So the dimension of length has its own dimensions of length, width, and height. And then on top of all of that, there's time. So instead of saying there's length, width, and height, there's physical objects, they're a certain size, they move around, and then there's time, they're saying, well, there's nine dimensions, and plus time makes 10. So I call that an improvement, although it still doesn't leave us anywhere that's useful. But the Zetas have said that Planet X accelerates faster than the speed of light and then slows down, almost like the most sophisticated spaceship you could imagine, and then comes through our solar system. And the distances between our sun and the farthest reaches of this binary twin are so huge that there's no way that if they were to build a spaceship and put 200 years worth of food and send astronauts out, it would even get close. So it is an interesting topic, and I assume that that is possible. It makes sense to me that somebody can go faster than the speed of light, because if you're talking another dimension at a different frequency, who says all the rules have to stay the same as they are on this frequency? Like I've mentioned before, that there's a rule with this dimension, which is if you want to be an uninformed, stupid skeptic your whole life, you have the total freedom to do that. And nobody is allowed to interfere with that. So you have things that are happening, but they're always out of sight, where you can't prove them. Because if you could prove them, then the skeptics would have to admit that they're wrong. And being this is a freedom of will dimension, the third dimension that we're on Earth right now, you have the freedom to be an idiot. You have the freedom to be selfish. You have the freedom to be a skeptic, whatever you want. So there's stuff going on all around us that you're not aware of. So before those planes crashed, unselfish ETs boarded the flight and know exactly among all the passengers who were unselfish. And they took them right off the flight, saved their lives, brought to extraterrestrial domed cities. They're still living today. And it's well good that that happened.
I'm getting this terrible issue with Gordon's line. Gordon is up a mountain in Maine, and when weather goes weird, I think there are wireless links that get interfered with at different times with storms and things like that. So that must it's quite a remote place. I am also in a relatively remote place up in the north of Scotland in Britain. Looks like the fusion. Looks like the fusion centers are fed up with you, Gordon.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, getting better.
Well, that's good. Okay. So yeah, there's lots of things. Frequencies are changing, and as I said, we're going to a higher frequency. So it would be true that the frequency of everything is changing. This is not a random shift. It's not a random separation. This is all slanted for something that everyone should look forward to, as a kind of a change that's giant. It's going to affect everyone. And people that are too selfish to handle it are going to have to go elsewhere. Now, did you hear that? I have slower bars, but I hear you and cannot hear you.
Do apologize for everybody. We're having some issues with the
stream. I can hear you now. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly.
Oh my God! Whatever. The Fusion Center took a break.
Yeah.
Jesus. Well, I want to say that frequencies are increasing, but nothing is random. There's no separations or shifts that are random that are just going to pull things apart and we're going to be floating in space. This is all part of a plan to bring an increased frequency to Earth for a select group of people who are ready, who are going to graduate. And it's a self-selection process. If you've developed empathy and you're living according to the golden rule and thinking of others before you think of them yourselves, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. If you're doing that at least 51% of the time, then it can be said that the majority of your efforts are unselfish, and therefore that allows you to get on the bus and go to the new world, the new graduation, which is going to take place right here. What's going to happen is the people that can't handle that are going to be leaving. So in that, did you hear me say that? So, I don't hear anything that JP is saying. Maybe he hears what I say.
No, all right, okay. Again, I'm muted. See, when you talk, I mute because of the background sounds and everything. So,
have a wet noodle and I'm going to slap it upside your head.
Yeah, splick. Oh, ow. That was soft and moist. Anyway, what we heard was... that some people who can't handle it will be leaving, and then you cut off again, and then you cut off again.
Inheriting the earth. So, I don't. My way through it, if you want to. I can't hear you at all right now, but perhaps you can hear me, so.
I can hear you.
My wife says that the bus is running, are you going to be on it or not? And that's the bus to the new world, and it's, you don't have to go any.
Yeah.
There's no seat.
It's you're being majorly chopped up, but from what I understand you're saying is the ticket to the bus is empathy.
Exactly.
That's it.
Yep, you get your ticket by your intentions and your behavior. So this is not something that you can purchase. You have to change your intentions and your behavior to be a constructive person.
Yeah, and it's very interesting. Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, good. One of the stories that really sort of got to me was the one about the Moses and the people who wanted meat.
Yes.
Do you want to tell that one again? Because I think it's
the sky. The ducks that fell from the sky.
Yes.
Ducks. Well, Moses told the people that they're not going to be eating meat. So a lot of people wanted meat. So one day a flight of ducks flew over the Israelites and most of them fell dead to the ground. And those that picked up the ducks and cooked them up and ate them died the next morning. So, that is a cruel, and vengeful God. That was the God Jehovah. And that's some of his typical behavior. And that's really what the problem is, with the selfish Anunnaki. But he was the last so-called, quote unquote, Anunnaki God on earth, was Jehovah. And after that, we've been blessed with his absence and maybe he realizes what he did was wrong. But who cares? As long as he doesn't come back, it's fine with us.
So, but he might be still sort of jetting about somewhere or hanging out.
Well, I mean, I don't know what he does, but he claimed to be God, but he was just a powerful extraterrestrial. Maybe he's died and now he'll be reborn as something a little more, with a little more humility to it, like an untouchable in India.
Sorry, as a duck.
Well, I was talking about the ducks falling from the sky for the Jews when they wanted meat.
Exactly.
But so, you know, he wanted things a certain way. He created a little test. Okay, we'll see who eats the meat, and then we'll kill them. So that was his answer to that.
You know, I have a guest who, whether you believe it or not, was part of the time travel and time and space continuum travel group in the 1960s and 70s. And he says he's traveled to Mars several times and knows it quite well. And one of the things he says is that, and it was, this came as quite a surprise, you know, because I've been speaking to him loads, and this is the first time he'd ever talked about it. And he said that the people who go to Mars, if you eat meat, they tend to leave you outside because they can smell, you know, there are a lot of very fast carnivorous creatures on Mars, and it's a very hostile place, and that if you eat meat, they smell you a long way away, and they'll come and collect you for dinner.
Well, that's undoubtedly true, that you are what you eat, and you can, different people on different diets smell like different things. But I'm very familiar, I'm friends with one of the people, Bernie Mendez, who made this claim that he was part of this jump room project going to Mars. And honestly, I don't know what to make of it.
Well, my contact is William Stillings, and you can listen to his archives, and I've got loads of archives with him, several interviews. Yeah, I'm gonna have to recreate the archive page so you can see it by listener, by person as well, by our guest. So, yeah, so smelling different.
Well, you see, like for instance, they were there in a group, and they looked over, and these dinosaurs came and killed and ate somebody in their group. Mm. So they kept using the jump room to go back, thinking we're going to get there 10 minutes before he's eaten and we're going to rescue him. And every single time they jumped back to the exact same situation. There he is. The dinosaurs jump on him, kill him, and eat him. And they never were able to get there before he was killed so they could rescue him. And they never were able to go back in time to before they left, so he didn't even go to Mars, so therefore he wouldn't be eaten. It's questions like that that I have in my mind. And then at one point they were on Mars and they were going to take some piece of stone as a sample back, and they took out a knife to break off a piece and it turned out to be plastic. So it really makes you wonder, like, where does the programming of the government begin and end? Even if they really thought they did that, how much of it was programming and how much of it really happened? And that's the problem I have with it. I do not have a problem with the fact that there are extraterrestrials using time travel. And I do not have a problem with selfish people on Earth, the elite and the powerful, using time travel to create horrendous events by jumping forward in the future and setting things up. So I don't have a problem with time travel. It's just that particular story, there's something funny about it because of the people who are involved. We're all involved with the CIA. And really, can you trust any of them any farther than you can throw them?
And children of CIA as well.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a very interesting story. And if you really want to explore the unsolved mysteries of Earth, that's certainly a major one. To see that they were saying they're going back in time and they're going forward in time, and they're also going to other locations in the same time, and they're going to other locations in the past and other locations in the future off Earth. So this is a fascinating topic, but where the truth with that begins and ends, I'm very suspicious of their story, but yet I don't have enough knowledge of it, of what the government can and can't do to know whether how much of that is true. But as to whether there were extraterrestrial devices left on Earth in secret deep caverns and they were discovered by the CIA or other governments and used constructively or nefariously, I have no idea, but I always say that anything you can imagine is probably happening somewhere. So I would go with the fact there's some truth to it, but I just don't know what.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, this is an amazing picture to start with, but who knows how big the big picture that that picture fits into is.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, as the universe expands, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, you go higher dimensions and they get even bigger as well. So, however.
Yeah, so I love all these questions. You know, I think that, you know, there's the kinds of things that I would normally think of, like what's possible, what's happened, what's going to happen. I'm always interested in that stuff. I remember as a child thinking, what's the meaning of life? And then my second question was, what in the hell is going on here? You know? So I have a curiosity that won't quit on that topic. And so I have a lot of experience with extremely unusual things. I've been brought somewhere for 3 days and come back 10 minutes after I left. You know, I didn't tell you the story of my Casio watch, I don't think, but I was, went to visit my mother with a friend. He was in the second bedroom. I was in the living room, and my mother and her boyfriend were in the master bedroom. So we're asleep in the middle of the night. There's a humming sound. They're on the second story of a condominium. The whole roof is vibrating. They wake up instantly. My mother, her boyfriend, and my friend in two separate rooms. They rush to the window and they look out, and there's nothing outside, and they still hear this humming in the roof. And then they instantly think, oh, I should go right back to sleep. So they go right back to sleep. They note the time. They go right back to sleep. And 10 minutes later, they're woken up out of a deep sleep by the same humming vibration coming from the roof of this condominium. And they rush to the window and they look out and there's nothing there. And they think, we've got to go right back to sleep. None of them came in the living room to see if I was there or what had gone on with me. And I didn't hear a thing. So I had, at that time, I was wearing a very expensive Casio Eclipse watch, which you had so many buttons on it you could push to access so many different programs to tell you any lunar eclipse or solar eclipse. Is the eclipse watch. It had all kinds of stuff on there. It even had diagrams of the solar system, and you could select the date and it would show you where all the planets were on any date for like 2,000 years. So it was a really interesting watch. But I can tell you this, there's no way you could accidentally, by pushing buttons, set the date 3 days ahead. So the next morning I get up, they're telling me there was a strange noise, and they didn't know what it was, they went back to bed. Then 10 minutes later they heard it again, they went back to bed. So then my friend continued to drive me somewhere.
Oh, and there you go again.
Gone somewhere for 3 days, and I've come back, you know, 10 minutes later. And so then I was working on a dock on the coast of Maine buying lobster, and the strap broke and it fell off my wrist. Well, it was a funny day because it was a total solar eclipse on the coast of Maine, and that's when the eclipse watch band broke and it fell into the ocean. So I was like, well, how in the hell am I going to get that back? Because the water's cold and I'm not a diver, and it was probably 15 feet of water, and I thought, okay, that watch is gone. And then a year later, a diver was working on the bottom of this dock, and I said, I dropped a watch, and it was right here, and it went straight down. Can you find it? And he went down, and he picked it up, and it was to the day, a year later, and he picked it up. It was covered with barnacles, and it was still working.
Wow. Casio made some good stuff. They made some really crap things that sounded awful, but they made some really good things that sounded, I mean, like some of their synthesizers sound all right. Sometimes.
Some right.
Sounded awful, but
I have one, so I know.
Variable. Very variable company, Captain. But excellent. Excellent. I have one thing many things to play, but here's something for Hulk in the chat room. One moment.
Do not meddle in the affairs of dragons, for you are crunchy and good with ketchup.
Ooh. Interesting.
It's just he quoted it in the chat box.
Well, I will say that brought fearsome creatures that they created to the earth to scare the hell out of people. They were real. They really scared the hell out of people. And all of this fear went towards increasing the control of the elite. And this was done by selfish extraterrestrials who had the power to bring these fearsome things to Earth, like chupacabras, dragons. There have always been mythical beasts and sea monsters who could
We've gone intermittent again.
They had to play that game.
So, Gordon.
So what?
Gordon, we've lost you again. Gordon? Yeah. So, we're coming up to the end of the show. we're still getting little chunks of Gordon. I'd like to thank you, Gordon, for coming on the show, for truly expressing yourself all the way. You know, it really feels like you've it's like I'd like to thank you. It's been a real pleasure to get to know you, to listen to your story. Gordon saying thanks to everybody up on the mountain. The fusion sensors seem to have had enough of him just for the moment.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, got you there.
Okay, well, listen, it's been a...
lost you again.
Please share it with other people.
Yeah, we're gonna find a way of collecting it all together and putting it in one place. Thank you very much. Gordon James Gianinotto from Maine, Planet X, on my website, everbeyond.info, we'll have all the pictures, the archive will be available. Okay, thank you so much.